Well, welcome back to Win Tucson. It is Friday. We made it. It's been an adventurous week. Some technical difficulties. Thanks for hanging in there with us. I'm so excited today with our very first guest. And I want to give you a little bit of background because if there's a busier working sheriff in the United States, I don't know who that is. So Cochise County Sheriff Mark Daniels is Cochise County Sheriff, which is on the border where we have 83.5 miles of shared border with Mexico. He's also the president of the Arizona's Sheriff's Association. Plus, he is the chair of the National Sheriff's Border Committee for Western State Sheriffs. If there's a better sheriff out there, I don't know where he is. And we won't tell Sheriff Lamb that I said that. Sheriff Mark Daniels, thank you for joining us today.
Well, Kathleen, thank you for having me. It's a great honor to be on your show.
Oh, I'm so happy you're here. So when I called you earlier this week and we arranged for you to be here, one of the reasons I was calling was just to acknowledge the it's been 10 years since we lost Sheriff Deaver. And I know you came in after him and he had been there for a long time. And so now as you look back on those 10 years, he really set the stage. I think he would be so proud to see the work that you have done and continue to do and the levels you've taken it to. But I just, if you would just let our listeners know for maybe just a minute about your relationship with him and acknowledging the history of Cochise County and how you got to be the sheriff.
Well, thank you, Kathleen. And let me just say, we had a sheriff's conference last week here in Cochise County that represented national sheriffs, western sheriffs, southwest border, major county sheriffs, and major county police chiefs, all convened here in Cochise County to discuss policing in our country or our border, etc. But before we kicked off that conference, we did a dedication to Sheriff Larry Deaver. He spent 35, 36 years of his life serving the people of Cochise County, state of Arizona, and nationally. He was in line to be the next National Sheriff Association president. The man was a co-author of SB 1070, working with our state lawmakers. He was a face, a voice, and dominant that to bring awareness to our southern border and why we need to secure all our borders in this country. And tragically, 10 years ago, we lost Larry Deaver. And I worked for him for 20 and a half years, followed my career behind him, all the way up to being one of his commanders. And this was a tough loss to Cochise County, the state, and beyond. And so we did a dedication last week for him. Nancy, his wife, was there. Governor Ducey actually did a proclamation for Larry Deaver and his service to the state of Arizona. And his children were there. So, again, it was just, it's touching. It was heartfelt. And we miss our sheriff down here.
Well, and you, again, you have stepped into the shoes. I'm sure they were big shoes to fill at the time, but you have, whether to honor his legacy or to take it in and make it your own, you've done a great job. Unfortunately, the problems, and I went back and read some of the things he said around SB 1070, the border, the role of government, and he could be alive today just saying the same things about what's happening. As we look at the border, everyone talks about the border. I don't think anyone fully comprehends what is really happening. And a year ago, we were saying it was unsustainable. Has it gotten any better?
Well, if I can go back for just a minute, Kathleen, I remember when I got elected, people were saying that those were big shoes to fill. Let me just say my perspective, my lens, those are scary shoes to fill because having such an iconic sheriff to follow, I mean, I was in his shadow, and in his shadows where I learned the traits of being a good sheriff. And that's where I'll hold. I admire this role model. Again, I can't say enough about how much we miss him here in Cochise County. Sheriff Deaver's got to be turning in his grave what's going on this border. It is a complete disaster crisis. All border sheriffs have an issue. All border communities have an issue. This has come from their top leaders, and Border Patrol will tell you the exact same thing. It's not exclusive just to Cochise County. We all share it. How we address it and how we deal with it is really based on hopefully the rule of law and the oath of office, but sadly politics does play a part in that. In my county, I can speak, since January 1 of this year till current time, we've arrested 853 border-related criminal suspects, and that's under state crimes, all the way from murder down to failure to yield to criminal trespass, bringing stolen vehicles in my county to pick up the migrants that come across our border illegally. You name it, Kathleen, we've seen it. We've run safe street operations down here from March to August, and in just those special details, we've identified 595 smuggling events, which turns into immigration events, which we work closely with our Border Patrol that enforce the immigration side of it, and then we do the state criminal investigations on it. But we've identified 324 victims of crimes as a result of this border just in Cochise County. To give you an example of what the cost on that is, in my jail alone, every 3 months, it's $900 to $1 million every 3 months. My tax dollars, I'm talking about my citizens, have to pay to absorb this cost. It's frightening, it's scary, and I'll say if it wasn't for Governor Ducey, if it wasn't for our state lawmakers working hand-in-hand with this office, the sheriff's office and the county and the citizens, we'd be in trouble in Cochise County.
Well, and you bring up a good point, which is that if your taxpayers are paying $1 million and you're a rural county, and I believe I wrote it down someplace at one point, I think that over 88% of all policing in America is rural counties, which I don't think people understand that either. But you can't bear the brunt of this. Can we charge the federal government for their failure to secure our border and the financial cost that it's costing your district or your county?
Yeah. Those are viable statements and questions, and the answer is that falls under the legal side, the judicial side of this, and even the legislative side when it comes to what laws they want to push on that. But the bottom line is, in the meantime, as part of the executive branch and part of being an elected sheriff that was elected to sustain their freedoms and liberties and sustain their quality of life here, that every American expects, and to see what's going on this border is frightening. Just to get into a bigger picture, I was just given this to, last week at the sheriff's conference. In 19 months, we've had 5 million encounters and breaches on the southwest border from those coming across. And then you add, inclusive to that is 1 million gotaways. These are people that we have no idea who they are. We've seen them, and they got away. And that's a minimal number, too. So 5 million people in the last 19 months. And let's talk humanitarian for a minute, Kathleen.
Yes.
1,000 migrants have died on the southwest border over the last 19 months. 1,000 in the border counties that we've sheriffs have to address. There's something wrong with that when it comes to that many people dying on our southwest border that nobody's talking about.
No, and we have feigned outrage for illegal immigrants getting on a bus and going to Martha's Vineyard. We are about to come up on a break, and when we come back, I want to talk to you about some of the things that are happening that I don't think people in Arizona understand. Fentanyl, young kids being contacted by the cartels, and the direct impact on the citizens of Arizona. We are so lucky with my very special guest, Sheriff Mark Daniels. We'll be back right after this break. Welcome back to Win Tucson with your host, me, Kathleen Wynn, and my very special guest, Sheriff Mark Daniels, a 38-year veteran of law enforcement and with one of the toughest jobs in the country. Sheriff Daniels, I attended several briefings that you held, and I think the one that still sticks with me to this day was the young man who was waiting for his mom to show up for her birthday, and mom never made it because she was killed in a someone who was transporting illegal immigrants from the border, and I believe it was at a traffic light. And then, unfortunately, that wasn't the end of it. There have been many stories since then where people are transporting illegal immigrants, and I think the cost to do so went from $1,000 to $1,500 to $2,000. So the cartels are contacting U.S. citizens. U.S. citizens, Arizona citizens, are driving down to the border and picking up illegal immigrants and bringing them into our state. Is that still happening?
It truly is, Kathleen. It happens every day on our southwest border, especially in the Tucson sector, which Cochise County is part of. We address gotaways. These are people that are smuggled in the country. They're camouflaged. and then driven out of my county to Phoenix for, it used to be, like you say, you hit it right in the head, $1,000. Now it's up to over $2,000 per head. So it's attracting, sadly, juveniles through social media. It's attracting repetitive criminals from all over. In fact, I had a former law enforcement that I had stopped at, admitted to smuggling, had drug offenses on them that we charged them with here. But again, we're seeing it all over. This is a greed game that's attached to violence, attached to drugs, that's killing 300 Americans every day in this country. And it amazes me that we're not unifying as a country to secure our border, as President Reagan said. I mean, a country without a border is not a country. We are pushing that philosophy. He, too, is knocking on his grave saying, hey, we got to fix this, folks.
And our tagline is issues, not politics. And when the drug dealers, the human smugglers, the human traffickers, sex traffickers, they don't care whether you vote Republican or Democrat. They want the money. And this is about greed. It's motivated by greed. How big is the cartel's influence in Arizona right now?
Well, it's huge. It's huge not just in Arizona. It's huge in this country when it comes to them exploiting our southern border, them exploiting humans, citizens, and not, and the violence that they're portraying in every community. They're winning here because they have the will and they have the financial backing to do what they're doing. You look at the drugs, Kathleen, in our country. Last year in 2021, Arizona led the nation in fentanyl seizures on the southern border with over 5 million dosages of fentanyl seized on our southern border. Closest to us was California with over 1 million. So, again, it goes back to is a secure border goes back to public safety, which is community safety, national security, and humanitarian. And right now, we are not winning any of those three objectives, which are set up by the National Sheriff Association.
You mentioned you are charging as many crimes as you possibly can in your county. And Brian McIntyre, who's your county attorney, is, I think he works as hard as you do. But you guys have been working on, you said, everything from murder to trespassing. Has the amount of murders gone up in this part of the, in this region, in this part of the state, in the state in general? I believe that we've had an increase in sexual assault, in murders, but it's anecdotal. So can you give me some really hard numbers and facts?
Well, number one, Kathleen, that I was talking to Brian McIntyre, county attorney. I applaud him for his partnership with law enforcement in Cochise County, my office, and we go after it. I keep saying this. Cochise County is a beautiful place to visit. It's a great vacation destination, but it's not a destination for crime. If you want to come to Cochise County and you commit crimes, you will be held accountable. We enforce the rule of law here at all levels. We have a great judicial system down here, and I want everybody to think about coming to Cochise County to smuggle, to bring drugs here, to traffic children. If you do it here, we're going to charge you. There's no doubt about that. So, yeah, the stats are up. There's no doubt. You can't book 853 border-related suspects into my county jail and not put a burden on our county attorney. And, again, I don't know the exact number of murders that he's processing right now, but I know he made a comment to me a couple months ago. This is the most he's seen ever. So it's going to continue until the messaging continues. I know I hate talking politics. I'll be honest with you. I'm a very poor politician. I'm all about my oath, and that is to support that rule of law and protect my citizens. And, unfortunately, politics has infected public safety and policing in
Absolutely.
This country.
Absolutely.
A lot of people like to jump in those arenas and say, well, this is political. You can call me politics. You can call me a politician. You can call me that I'm sharing politics. I will 100% disagree with you. I'm out here to protect my citizens. I'm 100% here to make sure that those that violate our laws of the land are held accountable. That's not a political statement. That is a factual statement.
Well, you took an oath, and you took an oath to uphold the Constitution of Arizona. You took an oath to uphold the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, and there is a rule of law. And if we don't have law and we don't uphold it, we have chaos. And through no fault of you or your sheriff's department, and by the way, I've done a tour of the border with you and your sheriff's department, and they're exemplary. But what I learned is that what they're doing is unsustainable. And how do you, How do you keep them motivated, and how do you keep them going out there every day? Because they haven't stopped. And quite frankly, I believe you need additional resources. So what do we do as citizens and voters to support the great work that you guys are doing?
Well, Cochise County, I mean, this is, we have a border. But this is Arizona's border. It's United States border. We need to continue doing what you're doing today, Kathleen, and that is sharing the facts from people on the ground. I mean, there's a lot of things I could say to you, but the bottom line is this. We have a crisis on our border. The non-political stats support that. Those at the highest level of Border Patrol, Chief Ortiz, the Assistant Chief, Matt, all these folks will tell you the exact same thing. They're not, they're, as Chief Ortiz said, this is the most complex border he's ever seen in his 30-year career. All the way through, we meet with them as sheriffs. We have to unite. We have to share the reality of it. And we have to get to know our elected officials, and it starts in our communities. Talk to your sheriffs. Talk to your police chiefs. Talk to your mayors, your board of supervisors. Know who your governor is. Know what their stance is, not a political stance. What have you proven in the past, both as an individual, as a citizen, and if you were elected before? And that's the best report card there is. Because if we lose our communities, we're in trouble in this state and this country. And everybody says, well, I'm not going to vote. Always vote. Take your vote.
Thank you.
Always vote. Don't give up that. Always vote.
Your vote is your voice, and it does you no good to go out and complain about the quality of life or what's happening if you don't take a stand and use that voice in a vote. Legal vote, vote once. You know, I grew up outside of Chicago. There's tons of jokes to be told there. But I think that it's so critical right now that we understand how important this election is, and that we put people in that want to secure the border. 83, I think it's 83 and a half miles. Is that correct? That you share with Mexico?
That's correct.
And do you, being a border sheriff, work with Mexico? I've got to assume the people right on the border, on the other side of the border, aren't happy with this either.
And you're 100% correct on that. We do. We work the consulate very well down here. There's great people living in Mexico, great people. I'll go down to the port of entry, and I'll sit and talk to people that are crossing. They're as frustrated as anyone is. I mean, nobody wants criminal thugs controlling their communities, and that goes for Mexico, too. Unfortunately, these cartels are dominant in Mexico. There's no secret. That's not an opinion. It's very true. And so we, as a country, need to work hand-in-hand with Mexico and other countries to rid that evil. So we all can move forward. But most important is we're Americans. We need to unite, and we need to protect ourselves. And I'm a big believer that elected officials, state, local, and federal, should be supporting law enforcement, the rule of law, the unified message, and our military. They seem to be forgotten sometimes. In a time where instability is the name in the world right now, we need to have a strong military. And I'm 100% being a vet myself, being in the U.S. Army. I'm behind that, too.
I was going to say, you served in the Army, and you have extensive leadership and executive training. I believe that you attended a junior college up in Tempe, Arizona State University, where you got your certified public manager. I'm just joking at you because I'm a wildcat. But
I tell people all the time, it's great to be a wildcat fan, but don't be frustrated because you're second best in the state. I just don't feel like I'm so frustrated. But no devil. I
got
to get that in there.
Okay. That was my give you to you today. I'll let you have that just because you're doing all that other good work. We'll give you a pass.
Thanks.
So I look at 5 million dosages that you seized. What we don't know is what you didn't seize, and we have an epidemic when it comes to the drugs. And you know, this is not a war on drugs. This is beyond a war on drugs, and unfortunately, I think, is there a way to sue or hold accountable the federal government? I know we're going to get a whole new crop of leaders here come November 9th. No matter who gets governor, or no matter who gets attorney general, do you have a request for the next governor and the next attorney general of Arizona?
Well, whether you're a state leader, a federal leader, it should be a mandate. It shouldn't even be discretionary, that you need to work hand in hand with your community leaders, sheriffs, mayors, board members, because we have the direct pulse of every community in this country. If you look at what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now, and I speak to the leadership of Congress, I speak to our president and the leadership in this administration, is when you fail to recognize, when you fail to engage, and you fail to act, you're going to have frustration, you're going to have division, and you're going to have a crisis. And that's what we're dealing with in so many categories, to include our border right now. And it bewilders me that political clouds are dictating common sense right now. We've got to get back to the basics in this country and fulfill the oaths that you swore to take. And that is, number one, protect this country, protect our citizens and guests. And last not least is enforce the rule of law.
Sheriff Mark Daniel, thank you so very much for coming on Win Tucson. I am so grateful that you are where you are, that we have you. You are a treasure. And please promise me you'll come back again soon. Keep safe and have a wonderful weekend. And go Wildcats.
thank you, Kathleen. Thanks for having me. And thanks for all your viewers. And last shot. Devils.
We'll talk again soon. God bless. Welcome back to Win Tucson, Solutions for Everyday Problems. And I am so excited. My next guest, I think one of the biggest problems we have is where are we going to go to eat? And what restaurant are we going to go to? My guest is Steve Chukri, president and CEO of the Arizona Restaurant Association. And Steve, thank you for joining us today.
Well, Kathleen, thank you for having me, first and foremost. And secondly, congratulations on your new show. I'm excited to be a part of it.
I am, too. I think we can make a regular feature. There's enough great restaurants in Arizona. I didn't realize this, and I don't know how it got by me, but you've been doing this job for 20 years?
Yeah, 20 years this past June. And I started when I was, 10? I think, 31. Barely, yeah, exactly. That's what I tell myself. 31, and to tell you what a ride it's been, just from a personal experience to what you see back then from a perspective of just sales across the state of Arizona and restaurants back in 2002 when I started, to now, you know, 2022, is just remarkable. And I'm happy to share that with you as we go forward.
Absolutely. And one of the things, and I talked to you the other day, restaurants just barely hung on through COVID. COVID was probably the most disastrous thing that could happen to a restaurant business. And now we've got inflation. So can you tell me, what do you do to keep your owners motivated? What is your strategies for navigating through the political waters, through the culture waters, everything that's happened, health. So kind of take us through maybe a couple of years ago till now and let us know what's the health of our restaurant association and our restaurants.
You, perfect. I'm happy to. Well, let's start with COVID, because I think you mentioned that, and it's really important to discuss how that impacted us across the, like, not only across Arizona, right, but across the globe. And I'll never forget, there was a call I received from my counterpart in Massachusetts. And he called me and he said, I just left a boardroom with our governor and other restaurateurs, and buckle up because it's heading to Arizona. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he basically was saying, you know, hey, this COVID is real and it's going to have a real impact on restaurants. Well, that was early March of 2020. And he couldn't be more correct. And so we started to feel it and see it. And as you know, Kathleen, there is no playbook with COVID, from what governors across the country and Governor Ducey had to do to businessmen and women. There was no playbook, and it was a level set. So it didn't pick winners and losers. It was a level set across the board. And so for the first time in my, you know, at that point, 18, 19-year history and being in the industry, I had rogue restaurateurs that ran multiple restaurants coming into my office crying. I mean, it was one of the most remarkable impacts I've ever seen hit the restaurant industry. And keep in mind, I started right after 9/11 and some of the most tragic times of economic times as well of our history from 2002 moving into now. But our daily payroll, so when we pivoted to takeout only and restaurants were forced to close, our daily payroll went from 14 million to 2 in 48 hours.
Oh my gosh.
We laid off about 80% of our workforce over the course of that time period, just 48 hours. Our total loss that year was about 1,000 restaurants and roughly $2.75 billion in restaurant sales, all due to COVID. So then you have the aftermath of that, as you know, right? The complications associated with supply chain issues. We had people in the labor market that were getting paid more to sit at home than to come back into the workforce, which in some ways you can't blame.
Oops,
Steve. It was doubly given those two major factors.
You're cutting out a little bit, but go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. So it was very difficult to manage due to those two main factors of A, supply chain, not knowing, and then B, not having people to serve the food that you do have and can prepare. So it did wreak havoc on the industry. And I think across the board in the United States, Kathleen, restaurants lost a total of, I want to say, $275 billion in 2020 due to COVID.
Wow.
So, So it was amazing. It was amazing what it did.
And I had restaurant owners tell me that they had a choice of, do they declare bankruptcy? Do they lay off their workers? You know, the crying thing was real. There was so much pressure put on our restaurateurs, you know, and then we had Home Depot open. You just almost wondered if everyone needed to get a food truck and go to the parking lot there to survive. It was crazy because you couldn't go out. And then they started doing where you could come in and pick up the food at the restaurant. And then,
right.
And then everyone had to wear masks and all the policing that went on. I'm going to say normal. I'm going to put air quotes around that because God only knows what's normal at this point. But it seems to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, that our restaurants are back. They seem to be flourishing. And now the next stumbling block, if you will, is inflation. So you told me something interesting the other day about what the cost of inflation is, but what our restaurant owners are doing. And I thought this was a wonderful statistic. So if you would share about that.
I'm happy to. And to prove out your point that, you know, I think I did more interviews that year of 2020 than I did my entire career because restaurants were such a center plate, forgive the pun, of economics, right? And a lot of the media had questions about how it was impacting us. And you're right. People were very particular. And that's why we're in the hospitality business. We're not in the hostility business, as I like to say. And so if someone wanted their meal outside, packaged up on a table and didn't want to see anyone associated with that restaurant, we complied, right? Because everyone looked at COVID differently from a customer base.
Correct.
So back then when we pivoted our to-go menu on the platform of our Arizona Restaurant Week, which, by the way, we're in right now.
Oh, great.
And it turned out to be very brilliant. We were able to put probably 1,200 menus online over the course of a week of restaurants across the state that people could go to and just do to-go ordering. And then Governor Ducey, as you know, allowed alcohol to go, which was a huge boost and boon. So something that represented 5% of your profit and loss statement by way of to-go sales increased in the year of 2020 to 25%. And now it's only cut back to about 22 to 20%. So to-go is still very, very popular. And to answer your question, it saved our bacon. It saved us.
No pun intended there either.
It saved us. Yeah, no pun intended. It saved us big time, or else you would have seen more closures. Now, the biggest surprise to me was the response that I expected 2021 to be a very difficult year for the industry. To come back, and we shot right back up. We shot right back up to really reflect sales of back in 2019. So right now, I think our restaurants in Arizona are flourishing a large part because of a dedicated and committed customer base, but also because Arizona's growing. You know, we're growing by 250 to 300 people alone per day in Maricopa County. And to answer your question about the inflation, nationally, inflation in grocery stores and the like is up about 13%, whereas in restaurants, it's only up 7 to 8%, which shows, I think, the discipline we have to have, Kathleen, because you can't always turn to menus and menu in price increases because people can't afford it. And they'll shun your restaurant, and you have competition. We're some of the, you know, we're one of the most competitive industries known to man. And so in that regard, if you continue to raise menu prices, you're really cutting yourself off at the knees. So I think that discipline for the restaurant industry has really served us well in trying to keep our menu prices as reasonable and low as possible.
And one of the things I think you said is what, inflation's 13, 14, maybe after today, 18%. And the restaurant owners have kept, what, 7, 8, 9%? So they're not keeping pace with where inflation is. So they're really making a concerted effort to make it affordable to go out and eat, to welcome back their consumers, the people that come to restaurants. And I think that the social aspect of it, I really love going to a restaurant and just having it be full and having people be there and interacting. And when we get back after this break, we have a Super Bowl coming again. And a lot of people coming to Arizona. So I want to talk to you about that. And I just want to thank you for being on the show today. And when we come back, we'll ask Steve some where should we go to eat this weekend questions. Steve Chukri, CEO and president of the Arizona Restaurant Association. We'll be right back after this. I'm Kathleen Wynn with Wynn Tucson. Welcome back. It's Wynn Tucson, where it's time to solve problems by speaking up and bringing solutions to everyday issues. And when you get to go out on Friday and go to any restaurant you want, there are no issues. So, Steve, thanks for hanging with us and welcome back. What is the outlook from now until the end of the year for restaurants in Arizona?
Well, it's positive. I think the key factors for us are still we are grappling with labor and supply chain issues. It's far better than it once was, but they still are relevant to our daily operations. But I will share with you that last year we ended up at roughly $16 billion in sales across the state of Arizona. That's, again, $16 billion with a B. And as of July 31st for the state of Arizona, our numbers indicate that we were at $13.5 billion sold as of July 31st already. So we expect our sales to hit probably close to $17 billion for 2022 across the state. And keep in mind, too, Kathleen, that across the country, in the United States alone this year, we anticipate just under $1 trillion in restaurant sales. So that's remarkable when you look at our inflation for across the country right now. And you saw what the Fed did yesterday, and that hurts us on a discretionary income side. You've got high gas prices, which hurts us. And there is a direct relationship with prices at the pump increasing and our headcount in our restaurants decreasing, because it's discretionary income. And so to have all these factors impact us the way they have this year, economically speaking, and to still have those strong numbers is really something to be proud of. But it's also what's keeping us afloat, right? Because if we didn't, you would see restaurants closing.
Arizona has sports teams. They have events. They have concerts, all of which were impacted. Do your restaurant owners, and restaurant owners can cater, can do a lot of things. I think restaurants had to reinvent themselves during COVID. I remember when you were lobbying so people could sit outside and have, we expanded to our sidewalks. The reinvention of restaurants, but also the influx of people moving to Arizona, people being able to be social again. What do you think the outlook is for 2023 for restaurants in Arizona? And we're going to have a whole new crop of leaders, if you will, coming in. And what do we do as a state? So I'm gonna expand my question just a little bit. What do we do as a state to continue the momentum that is clearly happening here, so we don't go into another slump, if you will, in 2023?
That's an excellent question. I think that, you know, we're in a quasi-recession. You ask two out of three people on the street, they'll probably tell you we're in a recession. Does it feel like it when you see restaurants busy? No, it doesn't. However, if restaurants aren't busy, then they aren't making money. They have to be busy just to even be profitable or break even. So as I shared with you jokingly the other day, I was born and raised here. And, you know, growing up, we had two kinds of food, right? We had Mexican food, and then we had a different kind of Mexican food. So the diversity,
I love that.
The culinary diversity of Arizona has changed so dramatically over the past 20 years that's been a key part of our success. If I think we still went along the same timeline of you know, not a diverse group of chain versus independent restaurants, we would probably not see the success that we're witnessing here in 2022. So moving forward in 23, how do we keep Arizona attractive from a tax perspective, from a local and municipal level of trying to go and get your applications to open a restaurant? So I think your question about what can we do to continue this success from a governmental standpoint or from an election side standpoint would be, let's make sure that we're working together in partnership, and that cities and counties and other offices that you have to work with and forms of government you have to work with to open up a restaurant, that they're not overly punitive or bureaucratic and allowing us to build what we know will succeed. And when you see companies like Maple and Ash, that's a restaurant steakhouse in Scottsdale,
yes,
this was their first footprint outside of Chicago. And so that is something to celebrate and to trumpet, because Arizona was never known for that, right? You're going to go to New York, or you're going to go to L.A., or you're going to go to Florida or Tampa or somewhere like that. You're not going to necessarily go to Arizona. So the fact that we're appealing to so many different restaurant concepts to come and open here, I think is attributed to what we've done as a state through leadership on tax policy and attractiveness. And it's not all the weather, Kathleen. Come on, it's more than that. But,
okay, give the weather at least 10%, though. I'm arguing for the weather right now. Not climate change, yeah. Just the weather.
Yeah, but the reality is, if from a governmental base, if we don't make sure that we continue to sharpen our pencils and make this an attractive area to come to, if it becomes too expensive, you know, our minimum wage is one of the highest in the country. Who would have ever thought that? And if we make it more cost prohibitive, you will see a shrinking of growth without question.
And I think that's, you make such a valid point. We can't add taxes. We can't add hidden cost. Inflation, unfortunately, is in the cost of goods and everything is being driven up. So the profitability of a restaurant and being able to stay open is going to be incumbent upon us and our leadership to make sure that we don't add extra cost. And I really like what you said, Steve, about the process. If I'm somebody who wants to come to Arizona, I want to open a restaurant, I don't want the red tape to be so monumental that I look someplace else and go someplace else.
Exactly. Because there are people who will do that. You know, there are folks that can make it far more attractive. And a lot of it, too, in the restaurant industry, Kathleen, comes down to thinking outside the box. And so when restaurants need patio space, try to comply with it. Even if you don't currently have that in your city code, just, try to move around it or adopt it or change it to accommodate that, because people want the patio. We have to have a patio space in a restaurant in order to be successful today, just the way it is. Drive-throughs are another important part of what we do now in the quick service industry. And so if, you know, we've got cities now looking at revising their drive-through policies, well, that's going to kill a restaurant. And you know, those are employees as well as sales tax revenue going to these municipalities. So I don't want people to get from the government sector to get so caught up in aesthetics that they're kind of killing the golden goose that's providing them the tax income they need to operate their cities efficiently.
So you're telling me there's a citizens against drive-thrus in Arizona?
I think that there's not necessarily citizens, but there are folks that are looking at rehamping, you know, rehabbing their drive-through policies, which is, you know, look, banks use them, restaurants use them, so many entities, dry cleaners use them. We're a society of convenience, and to start regulating that in a way that will maybe shutter a restaurant or shutter a business is to me counterintuitive.
Absolutely, or start taking over CVS and Walgreens and just convert them.
Right.
Just ideas. You don't have to take them. Final thing. I'm now in Tucson, and there's lots of great restaurants down here, and there's a culture in Tucson to go out. And so I think it's a very positive thing. Does the Restaurant Association, it's Arizona's Restaurant Association, what would you say separately is the status of the restaurants in Tucson, Arizona, if you can let us know how we're doing?
Tucson is I think doing very well. You know, they call themselves, I think, the gastronomy, or I'm going to get the word correctly, but part of Arizona. And there's a lot of truth into the attractiveness and the culture of restaurants in and around Tucson, even going into Marana and going into Oro Valley and everywhere else.
Yes.
There's a great Italian restaurant that's one of my favorite Italian restaurants in the whole state, and it's right there in Tucson. So what I love about Tucson is their customers are very loyal to their restaurants. And I think that the restaurateurs and the chefs in the Tucson, greater Tucson area are so dedicated to their trade and their culture that's what makes it very successful. I've had people come in from out of state, and I've sent them down to Tucson to try certain restaurants, and they thanked me for it. They said, you know, hey, Steve, that was worth more than the drive. I just sat on a panel at a trade show for the restaurant industry, and there were three of us, and one of the judges was from Tucson. He was a chef-driven restaurant. And so I think Arizona's success is, I think, very dependent upon the restaurant success, I should say, is dependent upon Tucson doing well, because they're a staple of what we do.
Steve, I want to thank you. This was better than dessert and without any of the calories. I just love having you on, and we'll talk again. And remember, people, Arizona Restaurant Week, September 16th to the 25th. Go out and patronize our restaurants here in Tucson this weekend. Thanks, Steve Chukri, President and CEO of the Arizona Restaurant Association. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.